Hi, this is Donovan, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
A name? Good morning, I'm Mark Dunlin, co-host of City Watch, a watchdog for social, economic, political, and cultural issues in New York City. I'm joined this morning by co-hosts Bikai Pham and Larry Schimmel.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
And we got Sean Rhodes doing the engineering for us this morning. We have an exciting show this morning. We're going to lead off with Fred Floss, who's not so long ago the new executive director of the Fiscal Policy Institute, and sort of a tax day theme with April 15th coming up and what went on in the state budget and other sort of tax issues. And then sort of a hot issue in the New York State Legislature right now is whether or not we should label food with genetic engineered food in them. And we'll be talking to Elizabeth Henderson of No for New York and the Northeast the New York GE food labeling campaign. And we're going to end up with City Council member Ben Kalis, a new member of the City Council who's been very active on food justice issues.
So we're now joined by City Council member Ben Kalis. Council member Kalis, can you tell us a little bit about your background and why you decided to run for City Council and what district you represent?
Sure. So my name's Ben Kalis. Anyone listening can tweet me at Ben Kalis. That's K-A-L-L-O-S. I grew up in New York City on the Upper East Side. I went to public school. I graduated from the Bronx High School of Science, went to SUNY Albany, SUNY Buffalo Law School, and was a union-side labor and employment attorney. When I saw that the laws were stacked against us, I thought politics might be a good place to go, so I became a chief of staff in the Assembly, saw what was going on there, so I put all their voting records online. Didn't make too many friends that way, and ended up working with former public advocate Mark Green on his policy, and when 2013 rolled around, I thought the only way I could fix government is if I decided to run myself and do things differently.
Great. Well, you may be the only city council member who has hired a staff person to focus just on food justice issues. Why, and what are some of your key priorities?
Before we go any further, I wanted to first thank you for inviting me to be on the show today. And yes, we do have the distinction of being the only city council member with a food policy director. Her name is Amanda Melpolder. She's absolutely brilliant and knows everything there is to know about food. And working with her, I've learned so much and hoping to get a lot done. New York City has a budget of $70 billion. That makes us a market force, one of the largest market actors in the country. We serve over 1 million meals a day through school food, our prisons, and other city agencies. That's second in size to the U.S. military. There are a number of exciting food-focused initiatives going on at the city level that I'm proud to be collaborating with the food justice community and my colleagues on the city council on a number of issues. We're focusing on hunger, the Lunch for Learning campaign, which public advocate Tish James is leading, and I'm proud to be a strong upfront supporter on that. We're also trying to expand breakfast after the bell so that the 1.1 public school students that we have know that they've got 2 out of 3 square meals a day taken care of, and I'm taking a leadership role on community learning schools to make sure that we can at least take care of that third meal, making sure that every kid gets their 3 square meals a day before heading home, and that means that kids would be taken care of from cradle to career. We're also picking up on legislation introduced by Councilmember Brad Lander in 2013 called a Food Policy Council. We've been working with the New York City Food Forum, which has almost 90 food-focused organizations that it represents citywide, on creating that council. Also working with the mayor's office and their food policy coordinator, soon to be announced, to make sure that food has a prominent role in how we are making our decisions as a city. And then on a very local level, I like to say people come into my office to complain about a pothole, and we look at benefits.
Councilman Kalos, this is Larry Schimmel. What you're talking about working with the mayor and the city council generally on this food policy council. What kind of real support does it have, and what can folks do to encourage this council to be formed?
I think that first we're seeing a lot of support from the food forum and its 90 member organizations. I expect to have a lot of support from other progressive council members. We do have a progressive caucus with over at least 20 members at my last count. We also have strong leadership from Councilmember Brad Lander, who is now the deputy leader for policy, and also Steve Levin, who is a council member and chair of our General Welfare Committee. So in terms of it, we've got some very strong support, but what listeners should be doing is reaching out to their individual council members and telling them that they would like them to sign on to the Food Policy Council legislation. The more sponsors that we get, the more demonstrated support we have as a body, and the more likely it is to, A, come to a hearing by the General Welfare Committee, and B, come to a vote on the floor of the City Council.
Could you perhaps just give us a little bit more background? You know, what exactly is a food policy council? How would it operate? And, you know, what would you see as some of the key issues that it would, you know, address in addition to you mentioned, you know, the school breakfast and the universal school lunch? But, you know, what would a council actually do?
Good question. The Food Policy Council would be responsible for working with the and actually providing a lot of support for the mayor's food policy coordinator, and working with every agency that's dealing with food, from the Department of Education to the folks working with the prison meals, and making sure that we actually have a comprehensive vision. A lot of what the city can tend to do is do things on a piecemeal basis. And rather than trying to do things piecemeal, the council would provide stakeholders from the food justice community to food community to hunger community to farmers to producers to suppliers all to be a part of the table so they can figure out what we can do for food in the city to increase access, to make sure that everyone can have access to healthy food regardless of what their neighborhoods are, and make sure that we start eliminating some of the food deserts, and some people start to use the words food swamps. So I think what it does is really gives the food community and other stakeholders a seat at the table in forming a more global policy and working with any agency that's really looking at food to help make decisions, guide our city's purchasing, and really change things as we are a market force.
So we on Thursday, Mayor de Blasio gave a very good speech on his first 100 days in office. Lots of media coverage before and after. What did you think of the mayor's first 100 days? And how about the council's first 100 days?
I think we've all been really busy. We're working on our first 100 days and just trying to get a chance to catch our breath and see what we've been up to. I think it's pretty staggering what we've already accomplished in the first 100 days. Among my own campaign promises, number one was stop and frisk. Number two was pre-K. Another two items were STEM education and something I called wraparound schools, which is now being piloted as community schools. And so stop and frisk is now a thing of the past. We've gotten universal pre-K. And in terms of for my own two items, we don't have enough science, technology, engineering, and math, especially for women in that field. And in this year's budget process, I'm putting millions of dollars into science, technology, engineering, and math education in my district. And in terms of, as I alluded to earlier, making sure kids have all three meals a day, but also making sure that families and children have the support they need, and that when a parent gets home at 5, that a kid also gets home at 5 and commitment to after schools. There's a community learning schools pilot that I'm hoping to take a part of in my district. And then in terms of items in progress, I was hoping to get the law online, and I've introduced a bill with Councilmember Brad Lander. We have comprehensive rules reform that's just chugging along and looks like it's going to happen. I have Roosevelt Island where we need ferry service, and an announcement was for expansion has been made, and we're hoping to make sure that that continues to happen. I'm, in addition to being an attorney and city council member, I'm a software developer. I think I'm one of the only ones elected in the country, and I do free Libre and open source software. And as part of the preliminary budget hearings, I've been focused on seeing how much we can save by using this free Libre and open source software. We call it FLOSS, and Civic Commons, where we can budget together as a city with New York City, and even started negotiations with Boston, so that as certain laws come online and there might be million-dollar impacts, we can actually reduce that impact to a couple of dollars or $0 by using open source and free and Libre software. And I'm also forcing developers in my community to support local infrastructure. So we've got a lot done. We also passed paid sick leave expansions. And so I think we've only just gotten started.
You're listening to Councilmember Ben Kalos joining us here on WBAI's City Watch show. Councilmember, you've talked when you first got on air about people tweeting you, and now you're talking about open source data. People may not know that you as a council member have talked about technology as being one of those things that people need to have government to be more effective at. What are the things that you're looking to do about technology, and why is getting access to data and open access important as part of people's involvement with government?
So I think there's one important caveat. No matter how much energy I put into technology, I always have a commitment to putting equal energy into doing things the old way. And that's just because one of my goals is universal broadband and wireless throughout the city, specifically providing it to low-income families in NYCHA or anyone receiving a free or reduced meal ticket. And that's actually the free or reduced meal ticket, free internet or reduced cost. It's actually a program launched nationally by Comcast, which we don't have in New York City, and we should. But there is a digital divide, so I just want to make sure I acknowledge that. And what that means is, at my office, people can stop by anytime they want. We have an open door policy, and then once a month, every month, I do First Fridays where people can stop in and talk to me from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. at 244 East 93rd Street. And then we have policy committee nights, and we do phone calls. I'm in the community every night, so we're doing that. But on the flip side of things, technology can be incredibly empowering and help us do so much more than we've ever done. Council member, now Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer, passed open data, which means that we're now required as a government to put almost everything online in as close to real time as possible. And what that means is being able to analyze our data and see what's really going on. So if people accuse the city of not plowing, we can just look at the GPS records for the trucks and see whether or not they actually plowed. Similarly, on MTA buses, why are they running late? Let's just look at the GPS data. Those are two areas of data that we still don't have. I'm working with the two agencies to start providing as open data. And listeners of the show, if you're interested in there's a specific data set that you're not seeing on the city's open data portal, you can email me at bkalos@benkalos.com, or you can call me at 212-860-1950 and say, I'd really like to see this data, but I think data helps us measure how we're performing and helps us improve. And then with regard to just other technology, we have hearings. So I'll introduce a bill. We'll have a hearing, and it'll be usually during the daytime when people are working. And what technology allows us to do is let people record their testimony ahead of time, submit it by speaking into their phone, or they can go online, and hopefully as part of the new rules reforms, when we put legislation online, you'll be able to just click on it, comment on it, suggest improvements. And so that's something we're really hoping to have happen. And then all of us are that is put up online in a human-readable format with commentary and explanation on what it really means. So there's so much we can do there, and when it comes to technology, the sky is literally the limit. And including technology now, I think there's 13 different ways you can contact my office, from walking in or calling or sending a fax to sending us a tweet using Instagram, cclickfix, askthem.io. There's just so many possibilities. And anyone listening can just make one themselves, too.
We have less than 2 minutes left. I'm going to ask you a two-part question. You mentioned Gail Brewer ran into her last night. She has legislation pending to replace the runoff systems for primary citywide, which costs $13 million this year for the public advocate with the, what's known as instant runoff voting or rank voting. How's that going to go in the city council? And the second question, you might have caught the end of the discussion about the issue of requiring food with GE, genetic engineering, to be labeled as such. Any possibility the city council will come out in support of that? 1 minute.
I am a co-sponsor, a co-prime sponsor on the GMO labeling resolution in support of Assemblymember Linda Rosenthal's resolution at the state level. And so we're definitely going to make that happen. And I think, again, listeners should call their council members. I am chair of the Governmental Operations Committee, which has oversight of the Board of Elections, and I will be having a hearing as soon as possible on instant runoff voting, the way for every voter to win despite the outcome, and also to make sure that we save millions of dollars that we could better spend on ending hunger and education and so many other priorities. Thank you so very much for having me.
Thank you, council member. Good luck with your next 100 days, which hopefully will be as productive. So you have been listening to City Watch.
We have about a minute left.
So one thing let's try to get Councilmember Kalis and others in the council to do is to get the Access NYC benefits that are all available for screening online to be online submissions. Because right now you go and there are over 30-something benefits that are on that web page, and you can put in your information and they can say, well, Ms. Pham, it looks like you might be eligible for the following 10 benefits, let's say, only three of which you can actually apply for online, and the rest you actually have to, you know, go to this office on this street, go to that office and do this and do that. You know, many other states, you can then just submit the application materials online. So hopefully we can get to that. If this had been up and running during Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Irene, just think how many people would have gotten much faster.
Great idea. And speaking about Hurricane Sandy, Earth Day, Climate Change, Zuccotti Park, 5 p.m., Global Climate Convergence. You've been listening to City Watch with co-hosts Mark Dunley, Bickoff Bomb, and Larry Schimmel, the MP3 download, and, of course, Sean Rose Engineer. The MP3 download of this week's show is available at www.wbai.org. Go to the archive and look for City Watch. The show will be available 10 minutes after showtime and remain available for the next 90 days.